It's such an honor, Danny, to be part of this amazing podcast you're doing here, and it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
Your podcast is the one that I listen to when I want to listen to an interviewer who has A, actually read the book she's asking questions about, and B, asks really interesting, insightful questions about it, and I think that's really special.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
It was a good chat, great chat. You're a good interviewer.
It's an absolute pleasure to be interviewed by a very articulate person such as yourself.
I've so enjoyed listening to the podcast. Truly, I love it, and it does just feel like you're having a chat with your mate.
That's brilliant what you do. Honestly, I'm so in awe, and we need more word nerds like yourself.
Welcome and thank you for listening. Words and Nerds is a bookish podcast where I talk to authors about the social and political influences of their work. We talk about the writing process, publishing, life, and how literature can change the world. If you enjoy this episode, you can subscribe or leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. And for your weekly fix of literature, you can follow Words and Nerds on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. A huge thank you to Christopher Dicker, who has given his permission for me to use his music in the intro and outro. You can find Christopher on Instagram and YouTube. I'm your host, Danny V. Oliver Pomervan is a writer for children. He has worked as a primary school teacher and now spends his time writing and sharing his writing passion with kids and engaging them with humour. He's also a stand-up comedian and has appeared on national television and radio, as well as a number of well-known comedy venues. His first book for upper primary, Tyrific, was published to critical acclaim, followed by Con Nerd, Punchlines, Tynomite, The Other Christie, Super Con Nerd, Natural Born Loser, and most recently, Don't Follow V. Today we talk about Don't Follow V. 100,000 followers on Instagram, a young girl's dream, right? Wrong. Please don't follow V. Today we explore Oliver's new book, as well as the impact of social media, and we also talk about man versus food. We touch on a lot of interesting things in this interview.
Good morning, Oliver. It's such a pleasure to have you back on the Words and Nerds podcast.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
Now, today we're going to talk about your new novel, Don't Follow V, which I just thought was such a delightful read, beautiful characters, and intertwined in that, some really important issues.
Oh, thank you. It's, you know, it was a lot of fun writing, and it was one of those books where I've been wanting to write for a very long time. Had the, I guess, the time and the process to think about it and, get it done.
Well, it's a very timely book, I think, and very relevant for a lot of our kids. For those who haven't picked it up and read it yet, could you give us a 20-second elevator pitch as to what Don't Follow V is about?
Yeah, so it's about Veronica Lee, or V for short, and her mum is one of those Instagram mums who's taken a photo of her and put a mup onto her Instagram account every single day since she was born, basically. And so after a secret spills out, Veronica decides not to let her mum take any more photos and put them out onto Instagram anymore.
And I'm sure that's a bit of a phenomena these days, I think, with the obsession with social media and Instagram and trying to get, you know, make a career out of Instagram, which is quite bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I did some research on, like, Instagram mums and it's just a whole new world. It's just like it's basically a full-time job, and it's a lot to juggle. And I just can't believe how how much thought it takes behind the scenes. Because a lot of people think when you post something, it's very spontaneous, but they've actually scheduled it. They've actually put a lot of thought behind the post as well. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
And that's what I thought too. I was thinking about the authenticity of it. And V's mum, although she means well and she's a lovely person, she kind of gets trapped into this needing followers and needing likes. And then I thought about, you know, people are watching your life, but it's just so, it's not authentic at all, is it? Because everything's planned and scheduled and posted and brainstormed. And the whole idea of then watching someone's life becomes kind of, you know, irrelevant.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? Because I guess the really good Instagrammers, the ones who are really popular, are the ones who either have a profile of something else outside of Instagram, like a singer or a TV star or movie star. So for the ones whose sole focus is just Instagram, I wonder, their followers, if they actually after a while realize that it's just basically like a walking billboard of sorts.
That's interesting. And it also, you touched on YouTube as well, and I find it interesting. Like, I don't like my kids watching YouTube at all. But I know on the odd occasion when they have been allowed, I just see them watching other kids do normal things. And I just find that so bizarre, like why those things are so popular.
You know, it is so crazy because my nephews love watching YouTube, and they either watch people react to things or they watch people react to videos of other people reacting.
And yes.
Like, it's like a spiral hole of like just, it's just crazy. Yeah. And like, and I've noticed the influence already because a lot of my nephews like to watch people play Minecraft, and most of them are American. And so now my nephews are talking like Californian people, like, are you crazy, man? Like, you know, like, oh, no, this is outrageous. It's like, oh, wow. So, you know, back in the 90s, you know, people would think, oh, you know, kids watching American TV sitcoms and cartoons, and we're starting to talk like Americans. The same thing's happening again, but it's just with YouTube now.
I know. And look, there is no criticism or judgment. People are free to watch what they want. But I often think, why are you watching someone play Minecraft when you can just play it yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a new normal now. Like, honestly, a lot of people would say, oh, I haven't played this game, but I've seen other people play it. And so I suppose, you know, we don't have time to play games anymore, but we don't mind watching someone playing a game. One of the things I wanted to put into this book is the fact that kids use social media. They love YouTube, they love streaming, they love playing games, and it's just a new normal, basically. Like, you know, I didn't want it to sort of make a point out of it. There's like, I didn't want it to make it seem like it was a novelty. Like, it was just, it's literally entwined into people's lives. And when I go visit schools, and I, you know, I ask kids what they want to be when they grow up, half of them, especially the boys, would say, I want to be a streamer or a YouTuber. And it's something that you can't scoff at anymore because that's actually a reality. You actually can become a streamer or a YouTuber.
It's an interesting world, isn't it? And I think because people, you know, probably of our generation, I know you're a bit younger than me, Oliver, but, you know, I didn't grow up at school with a phone, you know, so I've had that kind of dual life where obviously I have one now and I rely on it, but I spent a lot of my life without one. So with the kids that are V's age now, they've never known a world without technology.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, like, you know, because I think we're sort of in the same age bracket because we're in a very unique sort of generation where we grew up with analog and have seen the switch to digital. Where, like, you know, and that's why there's lots of popular videos out there about, you know, kids of this day looking at like a Walkman or a Discman or a VHS tape or something like that, just for the novelty factor. And it's like, yeah, it's interesting to realize that literally their whole lives have been brought up digital. And you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to write about this was because I was in the car and Facebook had just turned teenager. Like, it just became teenager, like, you know, 12 years plus or whatever. And it made me realize, like, you know, so there were kids literally ever since they were born up on Facebook, and they've just been there on their parents' Facebook accounts.
And that's what I'm totally guilty of that, but that's what I thought as well, because we talk about permission and always needing to have permission before you post, but there's babies up there and there's no permission, and that kind of freaked me out as a mum myself.
And it's really changed the way that people, I guess, because, you know, there's a fine line of like when the kids get into high school, I'm sure they would want their own social media account or their own accounts, but, you know, it's kind of like, do they ask their parents to take those photos down? And I always do like a quick survey when I do my talks. I'm like, okay, now hands up if you would tell your parents to take them down, would they take them down? And a lot of them would say no. The parents would say no, I'm not taking them down, because, you know, it's just close friends, it's okay, except they've got like 400 close friends. So, you know.
yes, exactly right. And that's what I thought was funny as well, because usually we talk about kids being addicted to social media, but in this book it was actually the parents who were quite addicted and trying to navigate their world around social media. So that was an interesting twist.
Yeah, that's right. And I find, like, you know, it's, I mean, I'm guilty of that myself. Like, you know, if I mean, I love games, you know, I love playing video games. I love screens as well. So it's, you know, I can never sort of tell a kid to sort of, you know, for them to go banning on screens. When I myself use my phone all the time, I play games all the time as well. So it is a very tricky grey area, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, because I try and give my kids a limit on screen time as well. And then I think, well, I have to model that. You know, I can't say one thing and then do another, which – you know, having a podcast and communicating via social media for the
absolutely.
Podcast.
But that's right. You have to tell your kids, no, this is work. This is work. And then they'll say, but this is research. This is homework, you know. And so yeah, it's like, yeah, right. It goes back and forth.
Looking at V, what a wonderful character. And I loved her voice and I loved just her entire, you know, way of seeing the world. How did you come up with such a great character?
I think, first and foremost, a part of V actually came from one of my university friends, also named Veronica Lee. And she gave me permission to put her in the book in some sense because, you know, she was always quite sassy and she had like a very snappy kind of attitude that I wanted to sort of put into Veronica. And so a lot of my characters are just a combination of personalities that I've taken from like either kids that I've seen, kids that I've taught, or even just my high school or university friends. And so I sort of meld them all together. And, you know, I guess Veronica's voice really came naturally to me because, you know, a part of it was, yeah, using my friend's sort of own personality as a foundation. And then from there, it just was a natural transition of, like, you know, just putting her likes into it, like, you know, video games, cats. And, you know, and even just, like, you know, there's a little bit of Lengi in that as well, like, originally from Tyrific, just that whole, like, especially talking about her her mum, just that, you know, that whole, like, oh, mum, like, kind of that embarrassment. And, you know, embarrassing families is one thing that I love to sort of talk about in all my books. And so it was really great to sort of develop this relationship between Veronica and her mum using some of the things that I've done in the past, but sort of in a whole sort of different light as well because, you know, this is about social media, this is about games, this is about, like, fitting in as well, like... Mm. Yeah.
And I love Tyrific. I think I remember telling you as an English teacher, it's one of the first novels that I taught to, you know, when I moved to a new school and they just loved, and they were quite reluctant readers and they just loved it. So I loved thinking back to Tyrific.
Oh yeah. You know, it just celebrated 10 years and they've given it a brand new cover, a whole new lease of life. And it's really great. Like I still have a soft spot for Tyrific because I think that voice that Lengi had is probably the closest you ever get to me when I was a kid, when I was 12 years old.
And it's funny that you say 10 years because it makes sense exactly in my timeline, but it's still so relevant, you know, so I'm glad they've given it a bit of a facelift because it's still relevant to kids today.
That's right.
I loved V as well and how she was kind of teaching her mother, you know, she's the kid, but she started to teach her mother to how to live and how to experience life and maybe how to use social media a little bit more responsibly. And I liked that because that kind of flips it on the head, doesn't it? Because we criticize kids a lot for their technology use. And I thought, oh, this is a nice little twist.
You know, I dread the day where I have kids and my kids would be like, don't you know how to use it, Dad? It's just like you just press this and this and this. Like, didn't you have to back when you were a kid? Or, you know, aren't you used to having an implant into your head? Like, it's just so easy. But, yeah, like, it's funny because, you know, one of Veronica's plan is for Operation Don't Follow V is to sabotage her mum's account. And so the other thing that she wants to do down the track is also to just give her mum a life because she realizes that her mum is quite clingy to her, which is it's kind of like the opposite effect because usually it's the other way around. But, you know, Veronica, she wants to have her own life as well, but she's noticing that, and I guess this happens as well as kids get older, like, you know, you start to see your parents in a different light. Like, they become less of, like, a caretaker point of view and more of, like, a like another human being, like another adult. And so you start to observe how your parents are as normal human beings. And Veronica is seeing, okay, she's always at home. Like, her mum's always at home. Her mum's always watching videos or always watching movies or always watching other people's social media accounts. I think it's time for her mum to have a life. So, yeah.
And she's a very insightful child. I love, and this is good advice for us all, I think, I love when she says, some things are better experienced than captured on a phone. Isn't that beautiful line?
Yeah, it's so true. And even I myself find myself thinking like that as well. Because, you know, I live my life and I'm like, you know, if I didn't take a photo of this, if I didn't post this on social media, would it still be, you know, meaningful to me? And sometimes we get so caught up in trying to capture it that we forget to actually, like, just experience it and live it out. So
Absolutely. But then you've got the Facebook memories. And I've got to say, I love Facebook memories because it comes back and you're like, oh, 8 years ago, you know, this happened. Or, you know, my babies were such little babies at that time. And so that's where you get sucked into it because you think, oh, you know, these are great memories, even though you've got them in your head, obviously. Having the picture memory is so nice when it comes up too.
It's so true. And yet at the flip side would be... you know, sometimes if you've lost a friend or you're not in contact with that friend anymore, or so the flip side is like, oh, you know, oh, like back then when I used to do blah blah blah, and you have this sense of regret or this sense of like remorse as well. So it is a very fine line, I think, because sometimes there are some things you wish you would forget, but Facebook, I mean, the internet never forgets, I guess.
No, so that's right.
If you try to delete it, someone's ever screen captured it or something. And I keep telling kids this in my school talk, like, you know, imagine you were going to become prime minister, and on the day of your induction, they say, oh, hang on, look, there's a photo of you when you were 11 years old doing the floss, or like, you know, there's a video of you, you know, singing some lame song or whatever. And it's like, it could come back to haunt you as well. So it's... yeah, it is very tricky because I wonder how these kids are going to navigate. You know, I can imagine all their 21st birthday parties are going to have their parents going, remember you when you were, you know, 11 years old doing this, or back when you were 4 years old doing this, and they can literally upload and just, you know, show the photos. Mm.
And then when you're saying that, I think when any of the kids become prime minister, you know, if they become prime minister or whatever in this age, it'll be just so normalized because everyone will have this kind of digital imprint of their history. And so maybe... it won't even matter anymore because everyone's got one.
That's true, actually. And so, you know, the novelty of like back before they were stars, back before they became prime minister or whatever, would be just be like, I just could just scroll through their, you know, Facebook profile and see all the photos. So.
Interesting. It's a brave new world we're living in, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I think Instagram turning 10 this year because... one of the few hesitations. I had this idea for Don't Follow V back in 2006, actually. Sorry, 2016.
Okay.
2006, you know, that's a bit weird. In 2016, because, but I hesitated because I was quite wary of using social media in books, mm-hmm. you know, because I didn't want to date my book, you know, like nothing worse than putting MySpace in a book because, you know, Vista or something like that. But then, now that it's turned 10, or now that Facebook has turned, you know, 14, 15 or whatever, I think it's safe to say that these platforms are here to stay. And even though the kids now are using, like, TikTok and Snapchat and other things, I think Facebook and Instagram becoming, like, legacy social media brands, I think, like, you know, it's a given that these platforms are not going to go down anytime soon.
So. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. They seem to be, you know, gaining popularity. And what I found interesting as well is just this new language that, you know, we never experienced as kids in talking about followers and, you know, gaining followers and losing followers and having popular posts. And it's just all these things, it's a new language, isn't it? A new vocabulary and a new kind of way of being.
Yeah, that's right. And even with Monica, like, you know, basically sums it up in terms of like, you know, I have lots of followers, but having followers in real life is not such a great thing because they'll come and stalk you all the time. And she has this idea of like, you know, her life being up there her being like a planet and all her followers are like little satellites sort of like, you know, orbiting around her. And so it's just this concept of like, yeah, like what does it really feel like to actually know that your life is kind of like a version of the Truman Show in that sense, and like watching you all the time.
And people think they know you, but they don't know you at all.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's kind of like there's a difference between being a follower and a friend as well. And so, and a lot of people get that mixed up. A lot of people think because I follow that person, I'm their friend, but sometimes not the case at all.
Because like you sort of suggested in your book, the posts that people put on Instagram, they're very selected, you know, they're very selective, they're planned, and you're not going to put, you know, and she says, her mother admits she doesn't put those sad, bad days on because people don't want to see that. They just want to see you in this beautiful new dress or this, you know, cute little picture with your birthday cake. They don't want to see all that negative, real stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And it's kind of funny because... you know, when I see those perfect happy snaps, I wonder, like, you know, it's just a snapshot, but they could have had a really bad day, or they could have, you know, there could have been a lot of drama or chaos before that shot. So,
And I think we need to just talk about that and explore that, because otherwise it really skews our version of reality. And then that's when it comes into, we're always comparing our lives to these perfect Instagram or Facebook posts, when that's not actual reality. You know, it's a part of reality sometimes, but we really can't get caught up in thinking that that's an actual person's entire life.
That's right. Because, you know, like back in my day, like, you know, it was literally just you call each other up on a landline, and once you leave school to go back home, you don't see your friends anymore per se. So, but now because of social media and because everyone's got a phone now, like that FOMO, that fear of missing out, the anxiety, the comparing, it sort of comes straight to you now. So it's, you know, I really admire the kids who develop skills to become resilient to that, you know. And I think for every child, it's quite different, that process of being okay with themselves, but at the same time also realizing that their online presence is quite different to their real life presence, I think.
Absolutely. And I did think it was really important that you did explore friendship, because that was that real human relationship, you know, that wasn't dictated by social media. And so V's friend Annabelle, I thought that was just such a lovely friendship, and they had some, you know, some conflicts but realizations, and the idea that this real friendship is what's important. I liked that.
Yeah, and you know, Veronica has this thing where, like, she doesn't want her friends on social media, so on her mum's Instagram account, because she almost wants to, like, protect them, but at the same time she also wants to, like, just keep them to herself, because I find that for her, like, especially for Veronica, like her friends that she has, she feels are real friends that, you know, just don't want to become friends with her because she's famous or anything like that at all. And I really did have a lot of fun writing by Annabelle, because you know, herself, she's quite shy. She's almost like the anti social media person, in that sense of, like, she would never have the guts to actually post something or do something as a video. But you know, as you read the book, you realize that Annabelle actually, you know, does want to do something, but only if it's with Veronica, sort of thing. So
And look, knowing you from social media, Oliver, I really enjoyed your hamburger references.
Oh yes, you know what, I always put a character in all my books, whether it's the main character or just a friend, and Burger Brian is just me in a nutshell. Yeah, for sure. And like, it's kind of funny, because I've joined a burger lover group.
I'm not surprised.
Which is kind of like an app where it's kind of like the TripAdvisor of burgers, I guess. If you're in any area, they can tell you which place is the best burger place in your area.
That's wonderful.
And it's so cool to be part of that online community. And you know, this is like the good side of the internet and social media. Like, it's people being, like, kind to one another, supportive, and just, you know, like, it's really great to be sort of a part of a group where everyone has a common interest, and it kind of extends as well, which is really nice. But yeah, I love it. You know, I think everyone has to have a gimmick or some sort of point when it comes to their social media accounts. And I guess for me, it's like, yeah, burgers and games and the odd occasional book related stuff as well.
Well, I had a good time reading about the burgers and the burger competition and the methodical ways of eating a burger. I thought of you straight away in all your burger posts, so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, you know what? The thing is that I'm not really a freak burger kind of person. Like, you know those burgers where they basically have like 10 stacks or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
The thought of that makes me sick. Like, for me, I do it sort of for the taste more than the actual, like, the achievement. So which is why when I had to do some research about eating burgers, I didn't actually have to eat all those burgers. I just basically, like, looked up online of how the experts do it. And that's a whole different world altogether.
It is, isn't it? Have you seen some of those people who eat those hot dogs? They dip the bread into water. Oh, it's disgusting. Yeah.
I know. I actually heard a podcast about, like, someone who was interviewed for that, and it's crazy because, you know, for the longest time, a lot of people thought you had to eat the hot dog as a whole.
Mm.
But then these Japanese and people came along, and they sort of broken apart, and they actually, they literally take apart the hot dog, or in this case for Brian the burger, and they, it's just funny. Like, it's a funny way of looking at things, I guess. But I guess they're still eating it in that sense.
It is, but it just doesn't become food anymore or enjoyable.
No, that's right. I wonder if they actually enjoy it. Like, it just becomes like a competition of sorts where you just cram stuff into your mouth. So it's just like, I don't know if they'll actually get any taste out of it, but, sure. full respect to anyone who can dominate. Oh. And, like, I love watching, like, Man vs. Food and things like that.
Yeah.
That's a sport. Like, I don't care what people say. Like, eating food like that is a sport for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that guy on Man vs. Food, like, sweating as he's eating all that meat. I'm just thinking that cannot be good for you.
I would recommend it as a long-term career. That's for sure.
Oh, well, so enjoyable. Now, what's next for you, Oliver? Have you got something in the pipeline?
Yeah, so I'm currently editing a collection of short stories called The Odd Bunch, which is a collection of short stories that I've sort of collected over the years, and I'm sort of putting them all into one book, which is really cool. So that's going to come out next year in September. And speaking about short story collections, I've been editing a book with Caitlin Jo Temple, an anthology called Funny Bones,
mm-hmm.
which is coming out next month, actually, which is really exciting. And all proceeds goes towards War Child. And it's just so awesome to be part of a book that's over like 700-800 pages long. And it's like a bumper book of like jokes, cartoons, funny stories, comics, all that kind of thing. So that's really cool. And after all that, I'm actually working on my next sort of like middle grade novel called What About Tao? And it's about a kid who's the only Asian kid in a country town, but he actually loves it. He loves being the odd one out. So, and this is actually going to be my love story for all the country towns I've visited over the last 10 years as a visiting author.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that.
I have such a soft spot for them because, a lot of people say, country towns, being so remote, being so isolated, how does it feel being like, And yes, there are times where you are literally the only Asian in that small town for the next 3-4 days when you're visiting schools. But it's been some of the most friendliest and the kindest. It's been some of the most like memorable visits I've had ever in my career, like visiting small towns. There's a sense of appreciation and sort of warmness coming from the kids in country remote areas. So I've decided to sort of, use that as a backdrop for my next novel.
I love that, Oliver. That's so nice.
Yeah, because there are so many things that I've sort of been writing, sort of like different sort of settings, different scenarios, different times, and I've sort of put that all into my notes for ideas and things, and sort of, it's just great to sort of dig them out again and sort of rework this fictional town of Meghala.
Very nice. Well, I really look forward to that. And I love your work. Really, I do. I find your books are so full of joy. They have such delightful characters, but it's always still so relevant and important to kids, but you wrap it up in this beautiful, joyful world. So thank you again for putting Don't Follow V out into the world. A really important book, but so full of joy.
Oh, thank you so much, Nate. Like, I've got to say, I always call my books chewy creations. And chewy because, my imagination is like chewing gum, and when you blow out a bubble, an idea pops up. So this idea of honestly, this is such a fun job, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I just want to make, writing my own little funster kind of vibe. So I'm really glad that a lot of people are really resonating to it, and I really do enjoy writing these kind of like funny left field kind of books that have a lot of joy coming out of them.
And I do like that about your work, how you flip things on their head, even with your novel coming out. He really enjoys being the odd one out. And I like that because we need a bit more of that, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So it's, and honestly, I guess, the secret of comedy is to think of the opposite of normal. So it's, and that's why I really liked writing about V, because she's flipping her mum's life around. And it's also a bit of vice versa as well. So yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you again so much for joining me, Oliver. I loved the book and I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.